Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and this is our continuing coverage of the COVID-19 outbreak. As always, I'm joined by my co-host. Well, as I say, now I'm waving at him here, folks, on the Zoom thing. And you want to see him. He's like an old man in a duffel coat. Martin, how are you?
Not too bad, Tony. Not too bad. News coming at us thick and fast, isn't it?
News coming at us thick and fast. Let's try to be positive, but unfortunately we have to go through the actual facts of the developments of today. So, you know, we saw yesterday where Italy had its worst day with 368 deaths, but today, unfortunately, 349 people have lost their lives. It's slightly down. So if you wanted to put the best case scenario forward, you'd say it's slightly down. But however, it's still just, it's totally tragic. You've seen that the EU itself has called for taking an unbelievable step to say, let's for 30 days lock it down, as you would say, Mark.
Yeah. Is there a move afoot to lock the whole of the EU down at the same time, Tony?
Yes, it's they've done is they've actually said that they want to lock down the 30-day restriction on travel into the European Union and curb the spread within the European Union. So Spain is closing its land borders. Mm-hmm. Germany is closed its borders with five countries that border it. And, you know, when you think of the terms of the Schengen Agreement and what we talk about freedom of movement within the EU, this essentially runs roughshod over that. And in a way, I saw it was made by Cuiver Butterley, who we've had on, who does great work for refugees and for people who, you know, suffer trauma and fleeing war. She was saying it might give us some sort of insight into the problems that refugees have faced for the last number of years. And now we're only getting an idea of it, where this, you know, we will be disenfranchised. People will not be able to go on holidays. People will not be able to make what's called non-essential travel. Martin, I can see you smiling there because you know that's how privileged we are.
I've seen a couple of calls for people to saying to the government, look, you got to really tell people, be straight about this. The notion that you're going anywhere on holidays on a flight in the next 12 months, I think you're just going to have to say to yourself, that's never going to happen like it did in the past. It's never, ever going to happen like it did in the past, unless they come out with a vaccine and everybody gets vaccinated. And I just want to point out that a vaccine trial has just started in the US. Now, we will get these trials coming up. And don't get too over hopeful about them. But it's good to know that human trials have started somewhere.
Yeah, no, I think that is very positive. I'm glad that we see, and as you said, these vaccines, they're not, it can be, sadly, trial and error.
Yeah, it is trial and error.
But we are looking at it. I have to go through some of the stuff, but like, you know, Spain's death toll is now at 297 with over 8,744 infections, and Germany, as I said, he is closing its border with five other countries. Now over 1,400 cases confirmed in the UK, and we want to go to the UK because I had a good conversation with Don last night, and we spoke about the fact that while Boris Johnson was listening to scientists, he was listening to behavioural scientists and not the medical
the
ones.
The soft science, Tony.
Yeah, the nudge unit, the David Cameron's big society nudge unit. And we've seen where he's been trying to row back on his position without declaring it. You know, restrictions, you know, don't go to pubs, don't go to restaurants, don't go to these events. But we're not saying that they're cancelled. We're just saying don't go.
And we've seen how that worked here, Tony. You have to police these things. You do have to police them. Unfortunately, you do. There are enough people who will go that you have to police things. You have to shut it down. It took our government a day past or 2 days past when people were calling for it, and I think it was terrible on our medical people to be looking at that and knowing what that was, what they were looking at. I think it was a late move. Trudeau now has cancelled or has prevented anybody but Canadians and Americans from entering Canada. So borders are shutting everywhere. People are having to enforce measures. I think that's the bottom line. You have to enforce measures. You can't just say, please do the right thing, because there's not enough people doing the right thing.
Well, look, if you saw it, did you see in the US, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has recommended 8 weeks that, you know, no events with more than 50 people throughout the US for 8 weeks. Now, we spoke briefly earlier, and I mentioned to you that, you know, if they're talking in terms of 8 weeks, you made the point earlier that this is going to last for months. I think we need to be more honest with people and admit that, you know, the schools are closed, and it's highly unlikely that they're going to be back for the end of the 2020 term. The colleges, the likewise, you know, a lot of situations where life will not just return back to normal in 2 weeks' time. They won't be reopening on the 29th of March or whatever the case was, or was it the 26th that we said?
29th, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
a lot of people are fretting unnecessarily about this, Tony. As long as you have food, heat, and shelter, everything will get worked out in time. It's an unprecedented situation, and people need to be patient. These things, whilst they appear very big at the moment, they won't appear so big in a week, 2 weeks, whatever. They're not going to appear like big issues. We will work our way through them. There is no administration that's good enough to do it all in one go. I certainly think we should have been preparing for all of this earlier. Look, just live with it. There are more important things going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I do have to go back again. I keep bringing us back to the numbers. The markets have tanked. They have absolutely tanked.
Yeah, trade stopped today, Tony. Stopped altogether.
The ISAC down 8%, the FTSE down 4%, the DAX down 5.5%, and the Dow down nearly 8%. You know, these are huge drops. Now, what you're going to see finally is, what they didn't do in terms of the stimulus that they failed to do in the global financial crisis. That's happened. But what has to happen more importantly, and we have to talk about it, is the jobs that are all going to be lost, and the people are, you know, and the income that's going to be slashed over this period. The state has to step up now. The EU has already said, the ECB has said that they will not be, you know, banging the debt to GDP ratio drum over this. The fiscal treaty, the fiscal compact, will not be held over anybody's heads if you're putting money in people's hands just to buy bread and milk and, you know, essentials and keep the roof over their head. As you said, Martin, you know, light, heat, shelter, warmth, and a bit of grub. If that's what we're going to have to do. I know David McWilliams wrote about what he called helicopter money and putting money in people's accounts directly. I would, you know, I think that's a bit, sounds a bit like capitalism to me. I prefer the term universal basic income, and we start, you know, giving everybody a floor that they can't fall below.
I think they're working towards that with the COVID payment, Tony, and I think it's the only thing that really makes sense. Is some form of UBI. There's 140,000 people out of work since last weekend, 140,000. It's a huge hit, and it's going to get bigger. But the only way we can get out of this is lockdown, as the Chinese did, get it under control, and then you can start to get your economy back. And the game now has to be which economies come back first. We're in a great position in that we are an island, and if we adopt an all-island approach, we can nail this thing down and we can get our economy going again. Again, I still think we're 2 weeks behind the curve. I still think we should have done this all 2 weeks ago. But we will get out of it as long as they move quickly. And I know there's a lot of logistics, and that's where people have to be patient on this. Nothing will be perfect by the time the lockdown is in place. Nothing will be perfect. But live with it. Remember, there are other priorities people have to deal with.
Yeah, I think it's an important point. And actually, about turning the corner, you know, you're going to hear a podcast recorded, interviewed earlier with Dr. Paul O'Brien, who finished his qualifications in China and is a China policy analyst and was out there up until recently. And he spoke about the fact that how they've, now that the economic argument goes out the window because they shut it down. They've no new cases. You've literally seen huge cities have no new cases, And not only do they have no new cases, their people are back at work, and they're 63% back up to the effectiveness of the economy as it was pre-crash. And that's happened in a matter of weeks.
Well,
if
you take it that their first case was the last week in December, in and around the last week of December, it's after taking them a little less than 3 months to deal with it and come back. Now, are we on the same trajectory? I don't know, Tony. They've come out and said that this next week is vital for flattening the curve. And it is extremely vital for flattening the curve because they didn't flatten it over the last 2 weeks. So it's extremely vital now.
Yeah, I've seen that. We've all seen the graph and the spike and the trajectory that we're on. I butchered that, but the trajectory we're on is not great. We don't need to panic just yet because, you know, as you said, we can actually flatten it a lot quicker because we're the second least densely populated country in the OECD. We have a lot of other good things going for us in terms of how we can self-isolate. There are huge logistical issues and there are people who are the most vulnerable who need to be looked after. But we've seen today some of the supermarkets stepping up and saying, you know, restricting it to people, elderly people between certain hours only so they can shop without the hassle of this hoarding that's been going on. There's still a lot of goodwill out there and people are having a bit of a laugh. And I think a lot of the people who did party this weekend are feeling a bit sore about themselves and are at home now and understanding that, you know, the mentality of the people who built, and you'll hear this from Dr. O'Brien will say this, the people who built the country are still have a great value to this country. And just because, you know, they're the people who are most impacted by this doesn't mean that we don't give a damn about them, and we absolutely must.
Another thing too, Tony, and I'll hop back to it, is personal responsibility. I'm getting a lot of messages from parents on Twitter saying that they're having problems with their kids and their teenagers keeping them in because they're looking out and they're seeing other kids and teenagers out in groups. And I've seen it myself today, and I've seen, and I just throw daggers. I just throw daggers. It's like, go home. Have you no?
He means
parents?
Now. Hang on. He means with his eyes. Throw, he doesn't actually
throw daggers. Yeah. No. I think most people get that. Admonishing looks, Tony. Admonishing looks.
I know. I'm just there at witching now, going like, no, Martin. Maybe there's a few people who are thinking, yeah, no, Martin probably does, you know.
But no, look, they're your kids. They're your kids. Yeah. Don't want to hear that you're bored about them. Don't want to hear that they're difficult at home. Do the right thing and keep them in and make it, you know, work with other parents that are doing all of this. Don't make it more difficult for them. Don't be the outlier. Be the one that does it. We're definitely seeing some social distancing on a big scale today, but it took until the pubs closed. I got a phone call there from a non-Twitter friend who said, oh, the pubs are closed. This must be serious. And I've been telling them for a month, this is serious. But until the order went out to close the pubs, didn't take it seriously. Now, that was a huge mistake. A huge mistake. They should have just, as soon as those Cheltenham guys got in by boat or by plane, they should have just shut it down then. Why these guys are still walking around today, why people who met with the Italians the weekend before last, are still walking around today, it defeats me, Tony. It defeats me. Why hasn't it come sooner?
Absolutely, and we need to. We're chasing to stand still at the moment. Some of the stuff that needs to stop, and I mean this to everybody: stop sharing that shit on WhatsApp. And unless you know it's the funny stuff about, you know, a guy who walked a dog with a guy who bought a lotto ticket, and you know it's farcical and all the rest of it. But the idea of the army, you know, that you know someone whose dad cooked someone and we all have to listen. Stop sharing that stuff, you know.
I'm lucky in that my WhatsApp groups are the people who are 2 weeks behind. WhatsApp groups, and they're all beginning to realize now that this is actually serious, whereas a week ago they were asking me, was I on drugs? You know, and I'm saying,
answer to both was yes.
I said to them yesterday, do I get to say I told you so now? Do I get to say it? And it's not really that situation. You just want to protect your friends and protect your family.
Yeah, but I just want to say, like, even like as someone who cares for someone who has an underlying condition that with medication involved, you know, this stuff that goes around saying, "Oh, this thing makes you vulnerable and all," that stuff is dangerous, you know, because and it's dressed up to, and it throws people. So you have to be more careful when you're sharing that stuff, and just be more like. And I actually have to say, you know, the likes of Fergal Bowers, Richard Chambers, Gavin Riley, even, you know, our RTE for
Colette Brown.
Colette Brown. Yeah. It's hard to name them all because you know what, they're doing a great job of informing you with verified sources what's happening in Ireland, what actually is about to happen and when it's happening. You know, WhatsApp.
Just a few minutes ago, we heard that the Croke Park is going to be a drive-through testing area. Now that's great news. That is great news. And then we also hear that it's taken GPs up to 6 days to get results back. That's really bad news. So we've got to bridge those gaps. And we have somebody in Ireland has invented a 15-minute test. So, you know, we got to marry those two things together. The WHO has come out and said, test, test, test. This is how you deal with this.
That is absolutely what it's taken us 15 minutes to say, but test, test, test. That is pivotal. Where in South Korea, where they actually worked so well on it, it was the testing. Once they started testing, we have to ramp that up hugely. It helps with the contact tracing, it helps with self-isolation, and then it helps to slow the spread, flatten the curve. Squash Boris's sombrero, I don't know what way you want to put it, but that's what we need. Just for listeners, we're going to try and continue to do these things. We need support. We genuinely need support. Like, it's more bills coming in for stuff. But anyway,
and we have Dr. O'Brien next from China. It's a very interesting interview with Dr. O'Brien, and basically he's saying move quicker, test quicker, isolate quicker, and that's what he's saying, and that's what we need to be doing. The pressure needs to be. Oh, look, Tony, we can't go without mentioning the political situation. We can't.
Well, we'll go very quickly through the fact that they've decided to. They're saying, oh, they're really going to get at it now on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, I know. You know, all these delays are costing us, and it's horrible to say, costing us lives, Tony.
You can't, like, I mean, and you know what, in fairness, you might laugh at me, but Eamon Ryan came out again today and said, where is our national government?
You know me, I don't really agree with Eamon on a whole lot, but, you know, on this one, I'm going, yeah, Eamon's dead right. Just, you know, stop being partisan. We're all in this together. And if you believe we're all in it together and keep that message out there, well, then be all in it together.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've no time for this. I saw an article saying a loveless marriage. Oh, get a grip. You can put whatever Melrose Place, Beverly Hills 90210, I'm showing my age, terminology bullshit you want to put on it.
The people have been ahead, Tony. It was the people that forced the closure for St. Patrick's Day. It was the people that have forced the closure for the pub. And it's the people now putting the pressure on to have the lockdown. So your government is following rather than leading, and that's not good.
Last thing, Martin, are you watching anything good? Are you catching up on Netflix, reading any books?
I haven't been. I've been doing little chemist runs for people I know. I've been trying to, you know, without exposing myself too much, keep the vectors closed. I've been trying to help as much as I possibly can. You know, I have an elderly neighbour next door. I was just checking that she was okay without actually being face to face with her. I have another friend who needed medication collected. I just collected it and dropped it outside the door. So it's little things like that. And they're only tiny little things, but they are helping. And if we all did a little bit, and we'll all be called upon to do something, Tony. We will all be called upon to do something. There's no free rides in this for anybody.
Yeah, listen, folks, mind you and yours, this is a really good conversation with Dr. O'Brien. I really appreciate him giving us the time. He knows what he's talking about. He absolutely knows this stuff backwards and from all sides, from the analytics, the tech side. The tech side is fascinating around the contact tracing. I can't stress enough. You know, even if I should have just said to you at the beginning, skip to about 15 minutes in and you'll hear him. He's well worth it. Please, please put your hands in your pockets.
I'm just going to say that, Tony. Look, I'm going to be real honest with people. We understand this is a very difficult situation for people and they're worried about money. And we are losing patrons and we need to keep going. Yeah. So we need to build patrons. We need to put on as much as we lose. At the moment, we're in a deficit. Look, we are struggling to keep going. Please, please put your hand in your pocket. Keep the podcast going.
Talk to you all soon. Stay tuned for the interview. Thank you. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Dr. Paul O'Brien. Paul is a specialist in trade in China policy and has spent a lot of time in China. Paul, look, thanks so much for taking the call. You've recently returned back to Ireland. You've also written extensively about the outbreak of COVID-19, and I've seen you arguing for, you know, faster measures to be taken and showing how these restrictions can work. Can I just ask, as far as you're concerned now, as you've seen over the last few days, are we starting to catch up in Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, as you probably said there, we were a little slow initially. I think we definitely are catching up. There were some strong moves by the government last week to, you know, stop schools and stop, you know, public gatherings of beyond a certain number and stuff. So we're moving in the right direction. I think it remains to be seen, will we need to calibrate our response upwards? I suppose that's purely based on numbers, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, just in your own line of work, especially you're also, like, in terms of the personal protection equipment and stuff. I know when we were talking earlier, you were mentioning, you know, about items that we need. This trade link between Europe and China, this is crucial now at this stage, isn't it?
I think so. So there's a couple of ways to look at it. Before all this happened, before Europe had a sizable outbreak. Prior to that, China obviously was the epicenter, and there was a massive shortage of personal protective equipment in China because they put the whole country on lockdown, and part of that lockdown affected their manufacturing and supply lines for personal protective equipment and medical supplies. So during that period in about February, most Chinese were actually looking to Europe and to the US to actually source their products. There was none available. There was a huge amount of scams going on. I was actually trying to help out here in Europe to get supplies for China. I was working with Alibaba, the group over there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I encountered about four or five scams and not any sizable company, no suppliers that were able to get us the stuff. So going back from that, now China in the meantime has geared back up. It's actually at 500% capacity than it was before the outbreak.
500%.
So those guys are 500%. Wow. Yeah, it's a priority area for them. So they're working basically non-stop producing medical equipment. There is a proviso on that statement. They have an export ban in China as well. Hmm. And what they're doing is they're allowing manufacturers to apply on an individual basis to local governments, and they're calibrating that domestic demand against excess production. And if they find that there are excess productions in certain areas, they'll allow manufacturers to export to Europe. So that's where we're at the moment.
We've spent a lot of time in Ireland in terms of, you know, when we had the initial outbreak, the first case was obviously just a few hundred metres from my door. And they talked about contact tracing. In China, have you found that the contact tracing has been crucial to slowing the spread?
Yeah, I mean, I think we use the word contact tracing, but we don't describe exactly what is the how it's being done. So I think the way Ireland has done its contact tracing are very, very different things. Dealing directly with your question, yeah, it's a vital part of how China has dealt with the outbreak there.
Yeah, but when you say we do it, my understanding is we've used a similar method as we had if, say, it was a TB outbreak where we'd look at the individual and people that came into direct contact, and you'd have maybe a team of four people working on that individual case. Is that your understanding?
Yes, that's exactly how it's done. The issue is that it's not supported by widespread testing, and it's not supported by any... I suppose we've done a bit, but it's not supported by any significant quarantine and lockdown measures.
Yeah.
I think that's actually you're bringing me on to the next point in terms of the widespread testing. You have argued very well, and I saw you. It was actually mentioned again in the Business Post at the weekend by Susan Mitchell, who writes some brilliant stuff. And I keep saying journalism matters, folks. And she was writing about you, talking about that we need to ramp up. You've seen where there's widespread testing, where you can actually use that to slow the spread. Is that fair? Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at how the transmission dynamics of the virus, we know a lot now about that there is spread in asymptomatic individuals and there's spread in pre-symptomatic individuals. So unless we're identifying those people, we're having a huge amount of transmission that's being unaccounted for. If we're only identifying individuals that we know have confirmed disease and then trying to trace backwards, it's just going to be too slow. This virus is extremely contagious. It spreads extremely quickly. So we need to be ahead of that, not behind it.
And we're relying quite heavily, again, these are my words, and feel free to correct me at all stages. We're relying heavily on self-diagnosing and telling people, you know, self-diagnose and self-isolate then. Whereas other countries that have dealt with it have taken, you know, that there's more testing available, and that is helping them to be more aggressive in how they're trying to tackle this.
Completely, Tony. Look, if you look at the way this virus manifests clinically in people, the differential diagnosis, I mean, how would you differentiate this between other infections, is so wide. You have hundreds of similar viruses that, you know, have the exact same symptoms. Mm. So telling the public to say, if you have a fever, you know, and then in the background of that, we're also saying, look, it's not that serious. So we have mixed messaging going on here. It's a bit of a problem. So I think, without testing, self-diagnosis, all that stuff, it's just pointless. We need widespread testing.
Yeah, and I've seen, I saw GP Matthew O'Toole put up a short video of how a testing facility works in a minute, walking through it. These things can be ramped up, and obviously that will help, according to all the experts I've read, that it will help do it. I think you refer to it as pulling the plaster off as well. I'm confusing my metaphors now. You were speaking there about the fact that, you know, globally this is going to take a hit in the economy as well, but there's widespread acceptance in some parts, and China itself had to accept that a $600 billion hit to the economy.
That's a conservative estimate as well, Tony. Oh. You know, that's good.
but that being said, that's at the expense, but that is the price of preserving as many lives as possible.
I would argue also there are economic benefits. So obviously China has, you know, most of its cities now are recording zero new cases, and they have no active cases as well. So basically it means there's no risk of transmission in those areas. Hmm. Those cities now, they have been able to get all their workers back into, you know, full employment. They're able to ramp up manufacturing. Yeah. Supply chains are, you know, normal again. So we're actually seeing China's economy is already 63% back in terms of its overall output. Over 70% of people are back in work. So, you know, all the economic arguments go out the window when you see how quickly they can turn that corner.
Well, that's really positive, because we're sitting here this morning and, you know, there's a lot of stuff coming out from the Department of Social Protection about people losing their jobs. And, you know, I saw people even panicking because of the bar and restaurant trade saying, you know, you have to print out these forms, and it's like, if I can print out a form, why can't I just do it online? And we have our own debacle around the public services card and whether it's illegal, whether it's legal or not. And now people say, well, just use your public services card. And, you know, it's just a mess. And we need to streamline those things and understand that for the time being, like I've been arguing, and I know Rory Hearn, who does the Reboot pod here with us, has been arguing strenuously for if ever there was a time for a universal basic income or a rent freeze or a ban on evictions, this is it, you know. Can I ask you?
And I mean, that was part of China's strategy. They did a lot of these economic stimulus and incentive schemes during the outbreak. Mm. And that was hugely influential. They were able to, you know, make tax. They basically said there was no VAT for a lot of important stuff, which was a huge thing for people who were trying to import medical supplies. They put these, you know, obviously healthcare was completely free over there during the time. There was other ones. They brought in emergency legislation allowing, you know, freezing of rents, as you said. It's just lots and lots of things
Yeah, no, and I think there, and in, just in terms of the, where we are now, in terms of Ireland as an island, and obviously we have the problem with our near neighbour is not, it's not adopting the same policies that we are. They're looking at this. I spoke to Dawn Foster in the UK yesterday evening, and we were talking about them listening to behavioural scientists as opposed to medical scientists. And,
yeah.
You know, the famous David Cameron nudge unit seemed to be the behavioural economists as well. So we were talking about that, and then on the basis of that, in Ireland, but we've also gone to, we've been stages of lockdown, if that makes sense, you know, from the schools to the pubs. What degree, are there other degrees of lockdown that we need to go to, including, airlines and passenger ferries and the likes?
It's hard to say, Tony. I would take a different view than people saying that we need to look to Italy as being, the model, and we should steer completely away from Italy, because Ireland and Italy are hugely different in terms of just population density and infrastructure and scale in many respects. So I would worry of making the comparison with Italy, but I'd also think we should err on the side of caution. We should be thinking worst case scenario here. Overreaction isn't a problem in the long run if we're looking at the projections that the HSE made last week, where they're saying they expect 80,000 people, to die or something, or 1 million people to be infected. I think that's stark reading, and I would hope that we're in a society today where the lives of people, especially the people who helped build this country, the elderly, would be prioritised over some, economic considerations.
I think that's really well put, and I appreciate you saying it, because I'm always reaching for the words to how to put it well, because it is almost, I saw people refer to, as you said, the people who built the country, the people who've, the older people, and I heard someone use that awful phrase, collateral damage, and it send a chill down your spine. And you made another interesting point around population density. I think Ireland is the second least densely populated country in the EU27 as we are now. So we should be able to practice self-isolation. Unfortunately, we do have a homeless crisis still, and we do have emergency accommodation, direct provision. And I learned yesterday that all refuges are closed. They've had to close these things down, and it just means I'd wonder on what basis can we really see real numbers when we know so much of this is really closed down. My one other thing just to ask you though, when you said that about the PPE, as it's called, the personal protection equipment, how are we stocked? Are we ramping up there? And is that one of the main reasons we need to slow the spread so we can ramp up in the things we need?
We are definitely ramping up importation. We're definitely extending olive branches overseas, trying to procure these medical supplies. Myself and a couple of people are actually involved trying to. We're working with a local Hangzhou hospital, where the same city where Alibaba will be, and we're looking at it from two aspects. We're trying to get the tech sector or the private sector involved there, because we know that Alibaba is pretty open and amenable to helping out with this situation from a number of aspects, maybe with contact tracing, tech solutions in that respect, and also with actually donation of supplies and stuff like that. And then obviously we're working with the hospitals. We've got pretty good advice from them on how to manage our hospitals and set up our hospitals to make sure we reduce the potential for spread in hospitals, which will be a huge problem for us if it did happen, and some other initiatives as well.
I think, and then I'm glad you mentioned the tech side, because we have said, and I saw a comment in one of the articles that you were mentioned in, that they were talking about the fact that we all give our information freely to Mr. Google and Mr. Facebook, and that when you want to do contact tracing, if we were to rely on if the tech companies were to play ball, it would simplify matters a lot more for us as medically. And whatever you believe in terms of, should Big Brother keep an eye on you? The simple fact is, people are consenting to these companies to do this. I know in China, you mentioned Alibaba, just for listeners who don't know, is basically the equivalent of eBay. Isn't it? I'm correct in saying that?
it's a bit of a simplification, but I think, yeah, if you wanted to think about it like that, you would be helpful.
Yeah.
They've got their fingers in everything at this stage now, from AI to medicine to you name it, they've got their fingers in it. So they're pretty extensive with their business portfolio. But originally they would have started as, yeah, B2B kind of company.
Yeah. Yeah, no, trading
platform.
I am trying to simplify it. I understand I understand they're a lot bigger, but let's just, for the basis of this podcast.
Dairy Bay, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, look, I suppose the last thing.
Yeah,
go on, yeah.
Sorry, Tony, to interrupt you. I'll just kind of expand on that point a bit. So in terms of tech, there was two broad approaches done in China. They have their national approach. Obviously, you know that the big telecommunications companies are state-owned in China.
Yeah.
So there was no kind of barrier there for them to, there's no GDPR stuff in that respect. They just say, we need to do this, and the next day it's done. So that was the national approach. They contacted the telecommunication companies, and they have all the geosync data, and they were able to actually map the movements of every single person who was in Wuhan at the time. And they were able to stratify those people by risk, and they sent messages out immediately informing them, look, these are the symptoms that we think you have. This is what we suggest, not suggest you do. This is what you need to do.
Okay.
You need to turn up in your health center for testing. And that was done immediately. I think on the second day of lockdown, they had that done.
Wow.
And then on the private side, private sector side of things, they have Alibaba. And they obviously have their existing infrastructure in place there with the Alipay. It's like a, you know, Apple Pay type of thing. And that penetration there is huge. So most people would have that. They were able to piggyback on that and introduce this thing called the public health passport. And basically every day citizens need to do, you know, temperature testing. They need to upload that data on their movements. And then they get this traffic light system that basically gives them a risk warning. So basically if you're green, you're good to go. You can go anywhere. If you're orange, you need to stay in home for self-isolation. And if you get a red, you need to be going to the local healthcare clinic to get your assessment done and probably go under supervised quarantine.
Okay. So
it's pretty serious,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it is really serious. And it's really, really, really good that you've outlined that, because my last question for you was, what are kind of the next steps you'd like to see? Now, I know, you know, that's, you're talking about in a country that operates on a different model to ours, but nonetheless, yes, there's a lot of learnings in that model, isn't there?
Yeah, well, actually, I spoke to someone who would know a lot more about tech than myself, and they said the GDPR thing isn't the massive stumbling block, that if government were to bring in some kind of legislation in that area, emergency legislation, it could be surmounted as such. Whether or not the tech companies would play ball is another issue. Apple, you know, are very, very serious about their data protection.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook may be a little more open in that respect, but you never know. I think if we were able to kind of find some tech solution, it would certainly help us to increase the efficiency of our contact tracing. And as you know, the WHO are saying it's a vital part of it, even after the containment phase, during mitigation and delay.
Mm.
It's still hugely important.
Yeah. Look, Paul, thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And so we'll stay in touch and see how this thing develops. And let's hope that we do see these levers as Martin keeps saying, that we have to pull on every lever we can to try and, you know, contain this and slow the spread. So really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
Not a problem, Tony. Cheers for having me on. And like you said, it's real green jersey stuff. We need to all be working together. So
cheers.